Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. Former Malawian president sharply denies allegations of involvement in the killing of albinos.
They came up with proposals to provide protection to people with albinism, for example, to hide them secure houses, to give them sunscreens, glasses, hats, and so on and so forth. So that's what happened. In addition to that,
Sierra Leonean officials conclude a nationwide tour to assure citizens of plans to cushion the effect of global economic shocks affecting the country.
Well, we clearly understand that these are not the best of times anywhere around the world. Things are difficult, things are challenging. I mean, we all understand the genesis as well. I mean, most of it is occasioned by the ongoing Ukraine-Russian crisis.
And a prominent Lesotho businessman launches a new political party ahead of the upcoming October general election.
So the people of Lesotho have seen what I have done in business. They really understand that I'm still going to carry on making what I've done in business for the better for them. Now it is for the country. It's not only business. It is now for the country and the nation as a whole.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Former Malawian president has sharply denied allegations of involvement in the killing of albinos. Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika says the accusations are politically motivated. The former president says it appears his political opponents want to use the allegations and subsequent investigations to tarnish his reputation. He says the allegations come after traditional chiefs and prominent leaders called on him to seek a second and final term in the next election. His remarks also follow a decision by the Director of Public Prosecutions to investigate him and Hetherwick Intaba, a special advisor and cabinet minister in the former administration, over their alleged involvement in the murder of an albino man, McDonald Masumbuka. But the former president says he established a commission to investigate the killings of albinos to propose solutions for ending the murders. He has since called on President Lazarus Chakwera to release the findings of the report compiled by the commission. In part one of this phone interview, former President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika tells me that the accusations are aimed at tarnishing his reputation.
Since 2010, there have been a spate of murders, killings, attacks of albinos or people with albinism in this country. I came to power in 2014. This continued. So I decided to do two things. First of all, I set up a task force headed by my chief advisor on domestic policy, Dr. Ntaba, who is also, by the way, being accused also of this. And he chaired the task force. Under that task force, they came up with proposals to provide protection to people with albinism, for example, to find them secure houses, to give them sunscreens, glasses, hats, and so on and so forth. So that's what happened. In addition to that, I appointed a commission of inquiry headed by a retired chief justice consisting or comprising a former justice of the High Court, one of the leading clergymen, one of the senior chiefs, a bishop, and other, including one member of the albino community. They met with a mandate to look at the causes of the attacks on albinism, people's albinism, and also what should be done about it. And they toured the country. I even sent them actually to Tanzania and also Rwanda, where previous years there were also attacks on people with albinism. They made a report which concluded essentially that they're not sure what's happening. There is no market as such for people with albinism. Most of the things are based on traditional beliefs that if you have a body part of a person with albinism, you'll become rich. I mean, it's complete nonsense. It's really complete nonsense. And this is what happened. And in fact, Commission Inquiry found nothing. Now, the Commission reported just as I was leaving the government in May 22, after the judicial coup d'etat that you know about. And so I did have a chance to release a report, but the president has it, and for reasons best known to himself, he refuses to release this.
Mr. President, are you saying that the allegations against you are politically motivated to prevent you from seeking re-election in the next Malawi's elections?
Absolutely. The first, as you saw in my statement that I circulated to you, the first allegation in 2018 was aimed at tarnishing my name so that I don't stand in 2019. That did not work. And as you know, I won the election very handily. This new one has now been after 4 years. It's 4 years since this thing happened. Now, suddenly, when people started saying that I should get back into government, then it resurfaced the allegations again. That Dr. Ntaba and I were involved in killing people's albinism and selling them. And the thing's so ridiculous. it's so ridiculous. So the head of state that I'd be going around at night killing people with albinism and sell their body parts so that to make money. It's so ridiculous. They even went to the extent to say that apparently that Dr. Ntaba and myself have this machine and that we take these body parts of albinos, put them in machine and grind them, and money comes out. That might be for the election. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Mr. President, some people who believe these allegations being made against you and your former chief advisor, Dr. Ntaba, is that you have never come out strongly to condemn the killing of albinos in the country while you were president, and that they did not see any specific measure to protect albinos in Malawi during your presidency. How do you respond to them?
But Peter, that's completely wrong. First of all, I came out very strongly. Secondly, I appointed the task force to deal with the whole issue of albinos headed by Dr. Ntaba. And thirdly, I appointed a commission of inquiry. Its report is here, 107 pages, issued May 2020, headed by a retired justice of the Supreme Court of Malawi. So for anybody to say that I did nothing is complete nonsense.
Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika is a former president of Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, a look at how the U.S. Justice and State Departments team up to involve more women in counterterrorism efforts around the world. We talk with Laurie Freeman from State and Heather Roche from Justice to learn the benefits of gender diversity in operational effectiveness and the overall fight against terrorism in Africa, Asia, or the Middle East. The vital role of women in counterterrorism this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
In Congo Republic, the opposition party United Congolese Party, or PCU, says it will not participate in the legislative and local elections scheduled for Sunday. The party says the outcome of the vote is not likely to reflect the will of the people. The opposition party is instead calling for a national dialogue to determine the best way forward for the Central African country. Some analysts say the poll boycott by the PCU is a strategic mistake since it will not prevent the elections from proceeding. They argue that since the opposition Pan-African Union for Social Democracy, the only group with members in the lower house of parliament, is participating, it legitimizes the elections and thwarts effort by other opposition groups, including the PCU, from undermining the vote. For more on the reasons why the PCU is boycotting Sunday's polls, I reach Pauline Makaya. He is the leader of the Union Congolese Party.
In Congo, there isn't any election. It's like one man is getting all the power for himself. Nothing can do the people, because the man has got the gun, has got everything, all the power. As I said last time, when I talked to you, we need a dialogue. Without that dialogue, you can't win. That's why I said to my fellow militant, we can't go. We need a dialogue for the Congolese people, because the Congolese people still suffering a lot because of one man. The man is Denis Sassou Nguesso and his party.
If your party is not participating in this elections, other opposition parties are participating. Will it not defeat your purpose of boycotting the election?
I want to say to you, in Congo, the main opposition is UPC, the United of the Congo, my party. That kind of opposition is not good for the people. All the time, they are doing everything with the governing party. That is no good. We need a free, transparent, a democratic election. I want to tell you something. In Congo, our party is one of the biggest ones because we have got many, many supporters. That's why we are saying all the time, Mr. Sassou Nguesso, he gets the power from the gun. The man doesn't want to leave the power. He said to us, if you want to get my power, do like me in 1997. Because he took, as you know that, the power by the gun. We can't accept that. As I'm telling you, we need a good election.
How do you expect the dialogue to go? And do you want to have the dialogue with President Sassou Nguesso and his ruling party? And what do you think will solve the problem that you are describing if the dialogue were to be had today?
Congo, Brazzaville, is a country. There is many opinions. It's only UPC opinion. There are a lot. That's why we're saying like this. Congolese people from the north, the south, the east, and the west, and the center have to stay together to help Congo. Nothing is working. It's not only the Pauline Makaya. One day I will die. But to want to leave something from our children, that is very important. You can go there, you will see now what they are doing. They are giving the power to their children. I can take one example. In Ivory Coast, you can see Mr. Gbagbo, Mr. Ouattara, and Bédié work together for their people. Why not in Congo Brazzaville? When Sassou Nguesso went to Libya, what he say? He said, we need a veritable dialogue in Libya. Why not in Congo Brazzaville? Congo Brazzaville is one of the richest countries in Africa. Why Congolese people are suffering?
Pauline Makaya is the leader of the United Congolese Party. He spoke with me from London.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including Russia's aggression against Ukraine is high on the agenda as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken meets with other foreign ministers from the Group of 20 this week in Bali, Indonesia. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Meanwhile, as a prelude to Sunday's election, authorities in the Republic of Congo are taking several security measures to keep voters safe. For VOA, Rosie Pioth reports from Congo Republic's capital, Brazzaville.
Today is the last day of campaigning for legislative and local candidates in the Republic of Congo. Most voting takes place on Sunday. To ensure a smooth running of the election throughout the country, borders will be closed Sunday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and police and soldiers not assigned to monitor polling stations are prohibited from moving about communities. Inter and intercity transportation will be suspended, and shops will be closed all day. More than 2.8 million voters are registered to pick their representative at more than 6,000 polling stations across the country. Polling stations open at 7 a.m. and close at 6 p.m. Police officers and security force were allowed to vote on June 4th so they could be free to monitor safety. President Denis Sassou Nguesso, Congolese Labour Party, is expected to retain the majority in the legislature. Sassou Nguesso has led the country for nearly 40 years. The election is not seen as having major issues. Many of those running are familiar names, either current politician or, in several cases, their sons. Some opposition candidates have protested that their names were dropped from the electoral list without a reason being given, and they were not allowed to appeal. Tresor Pambubeki, an independent candidate in Nyeri, is one of those frustrated about names being dropped from the ballot.
Peuple. Nous avons appris avec beaucoup d'amertume.
He says he was surprised to see, like several other candidates, the absence of names, logos, or even faces from the ballot papers from these legislative elections. The Directorate General of Electoral Affairs has given no official explanation for the missing name. Results for the election should be known in a week. For VOA News, I'm Rosie Piot in Brazzaville.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
In Sierra Leone, officials of the government have concluded a nationwide tour to assure citizens of plans to cushion the effect of global economic shocks affecting the West African country. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Soare says officials also acknowledge the challenges facing the country, but quickly added that the administration in Freetown is committed to finding solutions to the prevailing economic challenges. His remarks come after Sierra Leoneans called on the government to solve the sharp rise in the cost of essential goods and services. Meanwhile, the government says it backs plans to decriminalize abortion in the largely religious country. The move is generating criticism with accusations that it is a calculated plan to divert the attention of citizens from the economic conditions. For the latest development about calls by citizens for government action on economic challenges, I read Sierra Leonean Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Soare.
We have embarked on a whirlwind tour of various parts of the country in order to raise awareness around global petroleum price hikes and the implications for basic commodities in the everyday market. This tour has taken us literally around the country. I led delegations to the northern part of the country. We have been engaging in the western area. Today we just finished a very successful engagement with the Interreligious Council. My deputy led delegations across the southeastern part of the country. The Minister of Trade has been up and about, dipping fuel storage tanks with his deputy just to ensure that people do not have an opportunity to create artificial scarcity, thereby putting together a thriving black market situation. You know, so a lot of things have been happening in the last couple of days.
Some Sierra Leoneans are saying things are difficult and they are calling on the government to come up with pragmatic measures to cushion the effect of the prevailing economic conditions in the country, as well as the skyrocketing fuel prices. How do you respond to them?
Well, we clearly understand that these are not the best of times anywhere around the world. Things are difficult. Things are challenging. I mean, we all understand the genesis as well. I mean, most of it is occasioned by the ongoing Ukraine-Russian crisis. But even before then, once COVID struck, you know, OPEC nations reduced daily supply of petroleum products by about 10 million barrels a day. That has not been fully restored. So there was already a demand-supply crisis there. On top of that, the Russian-Ukraine problem, which is further exacerbating the situation. Since the end of the civil war here in 2002, Sierra Leone has not been delisted from the high-risk league table. So it's very difficult to import things into Sierra Leone. And you also could remember that our export base is not very solid. So ships bringing commodities to Sierra Leone, you know, charge very high freight costs. On top of that, add high insurance premiums. So this is not making our situation good. But as government, we have been taking very practical steps to ensure that we cushion the impact of these difficult times on our already hard-hit people. To this day, governments have done interventions in the region of 380 million leones by way of subsidizing to ensure that our people are not very hard hit. Beyond that, governments have given foreign exchange support to the tune of about $87 million to enable fair importers to import this very essential commodity to the market. So yes, we are making a lot of efforts.
Your government recently came up with a statement that it seeks to decriminalize abortion, a very contentious issue in the very religious country of Sierra Leone. Some people are saying it's a gimmick to please the international community with such act and to divert people's attention from the economic challenges in the country. How do you respond to that, Mr. Information Minister?
Well, so I have a two-pronged approach to this by way of a response. Number one, this is not the very first time this administration is making bold and audacious decisions. And when each time we have done that, we did not do so to please members of the international community. When President Bio abolished death penalty, it was not to please the international community. It was to ensure that our country is brought in line with other sane and sober nations around the world. Again, in fulfillment of the TRC recommendation, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission had recommended the abolition of death penalty. Successive Human Rights Commission reports have recommended same. So it was not to just full tick a box or appease the international community. When you refer to this as an abortion bill, that is when the trouble starts. This is a comprehensive bill that addresses all issues relating to women's health, the right to make decisions on one's health. It talks about abstinence education. It talks about use of commodities and a whole lot of other issues ranging from accessibility and availability of products. So this is not just about safe motherhood, right? It's about a lot more.
Mohamed Rahman Souare is Sierra Leone's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown.
All the news and programs about Africa and the world are available to you around the clock on voaafrica.com. Our team is working on updating the news and updating new programs minute by minute to be at the tip of your fingertips. Make it a habit to visit our website, voaafrica.com. You will be glad you did.
The political pressure group called Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law is calling for the resignation or firing of all security chiefs in the country. This after militants attacked Kuje prison and freed more than 400 prisoners in the capital, Abuja. The assault left a security guard, four inmates, and some of the attackers dead. Concern Nigeria says the incident is the latest indication of the worsening security situation in the country. The Islamic State West Africa Province, or ISWAP, a terrorist group, claimed responsibility for Tuesday's attack. Concern Nigeria says top security officials should not remain in office, knowing that the militant assaulted the prison with no reinforcement to fight back. For more on the demands for the resignation or firing of the security chiefs, I reach Deji Adeyanju. He is the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law.
My reaction is simple, that yes, all the service chiefs should be sacked. All the head of security agencies in the country should be sacked. All departmental heads should be sacked. You know, ideally, the president will ordinarily resign, you know, but this is not an ideal or sane country any longer. And, you know, this further buttresses the argument by several critics of government, especially when it comes to issue of insecurity, that there's serious level, high-level collusion from people in government with the criminal elements and gangs in the country, because there can be no explanation that the attack will go on for 3 hours and there was no reinforcement whatsoever, and that all security agencies ran away from their duty posts. And that is one of the most important security facilities in the country, you know, because that prison houses deadly terrorists that have been apprehended and imprisoned since 2011. The Kabiru Sokotos of this world, you know, the Obote, and several other dangerous criminals you know, deadly terrorists are in that prison, and now they've been released into the society.
Deji, some people are saying that with this release, Nigeria should brace itself for an increased violence carried out by Boko Haram and other terrorist groups because they will feel emboldened to carry out such a significant attack without any response or prevention by security agents during the attack. Your response to that?
Yeah, my response to that is very simple, that indeed, Nigerians should expect our security agencies already look helpless. Some of them are already referring us to God, you know, and it looks like, look at what the governors that Farah was saying, that people should take to self-help, you know, and it's almost predictable that abductions will increase, insecurity all over the country will increase because these criminal elements that they release to the society are not, they are not going to go and start having a tea party. They are going to get to work almost immediately. It's regrettable, it's unfortunate, but we sincerely do not have a government in Nigeria. And anyone who is pretending about it is just being economical with the truth.
Some people are suggesting that the governor's call that people should defend themselves and arm themselves will create anarchy, and that the security situation in the country is being handled by the government mandated by the constitution to protect life and property, and that significant progress have been made in terms of bolstering security across the country. Your take?
How can anyone in this country say significant progress has been made in security in this in the last 7 years? How can anybody say that? What is going on in the country today? Is it not anarchy that is going on in the country today, where non-state actors have completely taken over at Kaduna Abuja Express Road, most parts of Kaduna, Katsina, Kebbi, Zamfara, Sokoto, most parts of North Central, most parts of Northeast, most parts of Southwest, most parts of Southeast in the country. So what else can we describe that with, if not anarchy? You know, so there's already a complete breakdown of law and order. There's no semblance of governance or government in place in the country. You know, so if the people, if the government who is saddled with responsibility of protecting life and property, you know, cannot do that, then people will begin to resort to self, like the Gafara State Governor is saying.
Do Nigerians expect any of these aspiring presidential candidates to give a detailed approach on how they're going to solve not only the prevailing economic challenges in the country, but most importantly, the security situation in the country ahead of next year's election?
Can we even talk about the economy if there's no security in the country? Can we talk about GDP if there's no security in the country? Where will the foreign investors come? Who will agree to come to Nigeria to invest in Nigeria? The expatriates, will they come here? The U.S. just issued an advisory to its citizens that if you avoid 16 states in the country, that 16 states in the country have been partially taken over by non-state actors in the country, and they are advising their citizens not to go there. So which foreign investor or which company, which multinational conglomerate will want to come to Nigeria at this point in time? And that's why most conglomerates are already choosing Ghana above Nigeria. You know, so these are the issues. Majority of the presidential aspirants we're talking about, they are just making empty promises. You know, they are dancing around in circles. No tangibles, no irreducible minimums. You know, people cannot really, pinpoint to any solid plan, security plan, to rescue Nigeria out of the doldrums.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the richest man in the Kingdom of Lesotho has launched a new party called Revolution for Prosperity, or RPF. This brings the number of political parties to 53 in a country of 2 million people. Sam Matekani says it was important to form a new party to, in his words, restore hope to the people of Lesotho following recent political instability in the Southern African Kingdom. The new party comes as the country prepares for elections scheduled for October. It is not clear how the RPF will perform in the polls, but analysts say growing support from the youth, disillusioned voters and the unemployed could make the RPF a significant threat to the leading parties. Local media reports say RPF leader Sam Matekani made his money from a host of businesses, including transportation, construction, property and mining. They add that he is also a philanthropist who has built new schools and sports fields to deprived communities, among others. For the latest political development and the electoral prospects of the newly launched opposition Revolution for Prosperity, I reached Sam Matekani, founder and leader of the party.
The people had already lost hope. Now they are seeing this as a new way of getting back their hope. I am from business, and people were already tired of the political arena in our country. Now this has given them a new hope. That's why we have amazing numbers in this new party.
So what makes your party unique that is attracting a lot of interest from the people of Lesotho?
So the people of Lesotho have seen what I have done in business. They really understand that I'm still going to carry on making what I've done in business for the better for them. Now it is for the country. It's not only business. It is now for the country and the nation as a whole, bringing changes into the situation.
So what changes do you think your party can bring to them that will improve their lives?
As a new party, we are going to make sure that there's rule of law in the country. We are going to make sure that there is stability in the country. We are going to make sure that we create jobs for everyone, not only for certain individuals, but for the people of Lesotho at large.
Mr. Matekani, what do you think your chances are in this upcoming October elections, especially since your party is new, making the number of political parties in the kingdom 53 in number? What makes you so sure that your party will perform creditably and perhaps give you a chance of negotiations to seek political power?
It is very true. We are running a new party with amazing support from the people. We are sure that we will win this election because the people now have hope. And they can see a bright future in Lesotho. We are certain that we will win this election outright, which is what we want, because we really want to change Lesotho around. Lesotho has got a lot of corruption. There's no jobs. The play fields are not there for people to do what they can be able to do. So we are saying, let us bring change that will go with accountability, because no one is accountable for anything now.
What do you say to those who have the opinion that you are a businessman, you've done a lot of philanthropical work, you've provided schools for people, and that dabbling or going into politics might tarnish your reputation, and perhaps there could be a political backlash by undermining your business activities in Lesotho and beyond? How do you respond to that?
Well, Peter, there was no other way to try and correct the situation in Lesotho besides going into politics. This was the only route that we had to take as business people to try and make sure that we bring Lesotho to exactly where it belongs. I know this might affect my businesses. It might affect other things as well. But this is the only route that we had to take, because without this, there was no future for this country. Absolutely no future for Lesotho and its people.
So with the formation and announcement of your new political party, what should be the expectations of the people of Lesotho ahead of this upcoming October general election?
The people of Lesotho has to do the right thing by voting right in big numbers so that they can be able to achieve their hope. The only way is to elect this new party, which is a revolution for prosperity, in much bigger numbers. Then they can be able to rule alone. Because what we have seen from 2012 to date is now we have been running coalition parties, which never really worked for the country and the people. There's just been infighting between the rulers up until today. Nothing for the people. That is why people are so hopeful now that there will be some changes for them. And we are appealing to the people of Lesotho to go out during the voting day and vote for RFP, which is Revolution for Prosperity, in much bigger numbers. Then they will be winners.
Sam Matekane is the founder and leader of the Revolution for Prosperity, or RPF, party. He spoke with me from London, where he received an award.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London on Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Yes, she
is. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Shake a break.
Mr. Gazi on this one.
Ivan Zichima. You say you can never be the one, but God say, make I tell you, say now you him choose. In 1 month, in 1 week, you will sing a new song. In 2 days, unless a dance.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Daniel Brown, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, you can't use your hand to force the sun to set. I'm your host, Peter Clotet in Washington. Good evening.